Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Tuesdays for the Dunkers. Hi, YouTube. Nikias, what up?
What in the... That was good. But hello. Doing pretty well. Fun weekend of hoops. A whole lot of in-season tournament things. Saturday was a wild slate. Sunday ended up being a wild slate with... We got a double overtime game that was almost a triple overtime game. A lot of fun basketball being played right now. Very excited to dig into it. Just to do a little bit of housekeeping first, for those who are new to us on JJ's channel, we will be here every Tuesday. We record on Monday mornings or Monday afternoons, so we miss the Monday night slate. Just keep that in mind as you listen to some of the analysis and some of the stats that may be dropped here. But we're here every Tuesday. We do, in general, go twice a week. So if you do like what you see or what you hear from us on these Tuesday pods, we do drop every Thursday as well. So you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. Now, let's dig into a couple of news items before we get into some of these teams and players we want to talk about. On the Bulls front, Zach LaVine, I guess officially now on the trading block. Some reporting from The Athletic, Shams Charania, saying there's some increased openness from both sides between Zach LaVine and the Bulls organization to find a trade for LaVine. This year, he's averaging 22 points per game, 50% on twos, 34% on threes, 87% from the line, a career high 5.2 rebounds, a little over three assists per game. He has already been linked to between Shams and between Jake Fisher at Yahoo Sports. And some other outlets, he's been linked to six teams so far. The Sixers, the Lakers, the Heat, the Raptors, the Kings, and the Spurs have all been linked to Zach LaVine in some way, shape, or form. Steve, one, are you surprised that we've gotten here with Zach LaVine in Chicago? And two, what are some fits you like for him if he is moved?
Am I surprised? No. I mean, if you go back to last year, it kind of seemed like there was tension, maybe too strong of a word, but we were reaching our time. As far as how that goes, you have been a fond person as far as saying this Chicago thing maybe doesn't work as far as this big three goes, and they have not been off to the best start. So I can understand that Zach LaVine may be the one to go just based on how things have gone. It'll be interesting to see where he may land. What say you, sir?
I think for me, like... Miami and Philly are the easy ones to think of just because they're good right now. They also have the big salaries to move. They have big expiring salaries in particular. I do not think the Sixers would move Tobias Harris with the way he's playing. But when you're just thinking about how you could construct the deal and what may appeal to Chicago, I would imagine it is going to be really good young player picks and or expiring money, considering how many years and how much money is left on Zach LaVine's deal. So, like, you could get two Tobias Harris and, like, Jaden Springer and something, like one or two of the picks that you got from the Clippers. You could do that for Zach LaVine and then get your, quote-unquote, big three with Maxi LaVine and Embiid. With Miami, like, they do have the Kyle Lowry expiring. Or if they want to go, here's our best young player. Here's Tyler Hero to get the money matching pretty close already. So, like, those are the two teams that come to mind for me in terms of good team, has the money to get it done, has two or three picks if they want to throw them in or if that's required to make that deal. Like, you can argue either way they should go after Zach LaVine for different reasons. How much better is LaVine than Hero is a fair question. And again, with how Tobias Harris is playing and what they may do to your wing room and the general size they have defensively, like, there are reasons to push back. But those are the two teams that come to mind immediately.
Well, I was going to say, this is the tricky part with Zach LaVine right now. I think he helps all these teams that are listed, right? How much does he help them, and do they need to make the move right now? Mm-hmm. Is where he may end up in a tough spot if he's looking to end up in a better situation. Because for me, I think he would help the Sixers. How much would he help the Sixers with how Tyrese Maxey is playing, with how Joel Embiid is playing, with their flow? It would make sense. I think he would fit, but do you want to break up what you have right now to do that and then have to figure it out on the fly? With the Heat, I think he would help them a lot. Do you need to make that move right this second with Hero being out? A situation like, in my head, the Kings might probably be the one that makes the most sense to me. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they also are willing to make that move. I'm stuck there with Zach LaVine as far as yes, we would like him, but are we going to take away from our core to get him?
And then even bounce off of that, because with the Kings, what are you looking at there in terms of construction? I would imagine Kevin Herter's in it, and I would imagine Harrison Barnes is in it. Do you go picks there? Like, obviously, like, you're just not trading Keegan Murray in a deal for Zach LaVine for very obvious reasons. Like, is it, I don't know, is it Herter, Barnes, Davion, and a pick? Like, is that something that appeals to both parties? Like, I don't know. And with Kevin Herter now starting to knock down shots again after a cold start to the season. To your point, you look at the contract difference, like, Zach LaVine is better than Kevin Herter. But is he this massive contract gulf between the two? I don't know. When I first saw the news last week, I tweeted out 7 teams, if I can count. Philly and Miami, talked about those a little bit. Like, OKC is interesting. I don't think they do it just because of who may be required to go out in that deal. But if you don't believe in the shooting right now and you just want another dynamic threat offensively, like, that's a fit. Certainly fits the driving mode for OKC. New Orleans, if they didn't have all of the injuries that they had right now, could have been an interesting fit. Like, I don't think they get in. The Lakers, obviously, is just going to be in the hunt here. Clutch ties and all that good stuff. They have the contracts to make it work. They don't really have the pick equity to make it work. And I don't know, even in light of cold start, move to bench, etc., I don't know if you give up on Austin Reeves this early to really punctuate that deal, but, like, that option exists. How do you feel about Orlando or Toronto for Zach LaVine?
This is the problem. Toronto makes sense for Toronto. I don't know if Toronto makes sense for Zach LaVine. And that's the goal for me. As far as Orlando goes, do you need to do that right now? And does that mess up your hierarchy with what Paolo does, what Franz does, and now LaVine will have the ball and need the ball? You clean up your guard room, it'll make you better. How much does it shift it as far as what you're building?
I think that's a fair question with Orlando in particular. I just look at how freaking good their defense is. And the fact that they do have all of these, like, mid-tier contracts and, as you alluded to, a whole lot of guards. Like, I feel like they could, if they want to, that's going to be the operative word. But if they want to, they can put together the young players slash contract slash pick equity if they need to make this work without really dipping into their core like that. Like, Paolo's obviously off the table. Franz is off the table. You're not giving up Wendell, which that's just also funny for other reasons with Chicago and Orlando. But you're not giving up any of those three. They could make that work. And I wonder, like, I don't think Zach LaVine pushes them into championship contention or anything like that. But the fact that it doesn't compromise everything that you have, it could be a way to juice this offense, which is just in desperate need of shooting, in a desperate need of another creator. You can do that. You still have enough defense and size and versatility left over to where, even if you put LaVine into the fold, I think they're second in defensive rating right now per NBA.com. Clean the Glass probably has them somewhere in the top 5. I don't think they drop to like 18th with LaVine. So I think you still remain that, you still keep that strong defensive foundation without torpedoing things, and then you improve your offense. Like, they have room to make it if they want to. With Toronto, I just think if you're really going to commit to the Scotty Barnes build, you just have to have more shooting around them. Like, it's just a non-negotiable for me. And I wonder if there's some kind of, like, three-team construction between Toronto, Chicago, and, like, Indiana. So we just had Caitlin Cooper on. Is Indiana where you go get Pascal to a third team that may want him, and you get some younger pieces in the door for Chicago. Like, could you work something out there to now you have this dynamic guard that can play off of and play with Scotty Barnes? You open up more room for Scotty to operate as he's continuing to play at an all-star level. And you quietly solve the, hey, are we extending Pascal thing? And now you just have this contract block slotted in. Again, even that kind of depends on, like, which direction Toronto wants to go in right now. But, like, I see the basketball fit. Any dark horses we should be keeping an eye on?
I don't have any. Do you?
I guess, like, OKC, New Orleans would technically count. Outside of those, I don't think so, honestly. Like, I've seen a couple of people in my timeline float out Golden State. which they very much have the contracts to get that done. And if you just need more offensive firepower in light of what it's looked like beyond Steph so far this year, I get the argument. So I guess Golden State would count as a dark horse. I don't think they are going to look into this very seriously, if at all. But you could talk yourself into it making sense. Brooklyn, will they just have an army of wings and stuff, like if Brooklyn just wants more shot creation in light of what their half-court offense is right now. Like, they're just going to be in the mix for that if they want to get into there. How would you feel about Utah?
I'd pass.
Okay.
You don't need to do it right now.
Gotcha.
It would be the reverse Chicago. Yeah, you would add more talent, but...
Well, what does it do? Yeah, I got you.
Continue your rebuild. That's my thing. If you want to talk Brooklyn, it'd make more sense. Is it changing how teams guard Brooklyn? No, we're just going to keep switching. You are another person that now has to drive. This is where I'm stuck off with Zach LaVine. It's not that he's a bad player. It's that, is he going to change how a team is defended? Like, yeah, you make a ton of sense for Orlando. Does that get in the way of Suggs as well? Dude, what's the hierarchy? Like, I'm curious to see where he lands.
Okay. Understandable. Okay, moving very quickly on the injury front. Bradley Beal was back and then now not back as the back is being reevaluated in 3 weeks. So we have to wait once again to see the full big three in Phoenix. And Memphis just cannot catch any injury luck whatsoever. Marcus Smart with a left ankle injury. He's out 3 to 5 weeks. And a quick update on the Steven Adams front. The Grizzlies were granted a $6.3 million disabled player exception since Adams is out for a year. They have to use that by March 11th. But with a signing or a trade, they do have a little over $6 million to play with. So just keep an eye on that. They've already signed Bismack Biyombo. Obviously, that wasn't part of the exception since it was just granted. But if they want to make another move, they do have another avenue to improve that roster. Now, let's get into some teams that have impressed us as of late. I would like to float out the Milwaukee Bucks, as we talked about them early in the year, as the defense was looking disjointed, the offense was trying to find a flow. I do have a couple of questions I want to toss to you in regards to the offense. But they've won 4 straight. They're 9-4 overall on the year. They're 6th in offense. 21st in defense, though that's starting to perk up. I would like to pinpoint November 3rd as a date. This is heading into the New York Knicks game. And this is after they got blown out by Toronto, where Toronto just got whatever they wanted to offensively. This is, you know, again, heading into the Knicks game. This is where Adrian Griffin says, I had a conversation with a couple of players. They wanted Brooke in a deeper drop. Sometimes you just got to listen to your players. Sometimes the players are smarter. Since then, the Bucks are 7-2. They're 11th in defense. They're 8th in offense. They were playing drop coverage at the 15th highest rate in the league, dead in the middle. Since that shift, they're top 10 again. In terms of drives defended, they were 20th in points per possession allowed on drives heading into that shift. Over the last 9 games, they're 7th. They were allowing the lowest share of shots at the rim when they were blitzing all over the place and trying to scramble, but they were also allowing the highest field goal percentage at the rim, over an 81, around 81% at the rim is what the opponents were shooting at the rim. Since then, at a top 5 rate in field goal percentage allowed, even though the rim share has increased, it would appear trusting your big fellas to take care of things at the rim is a sound defensive strategy, in addition to some other things. But nice to see them get a little bit more conservative defensively and trust Brook Lopez in particular a little bit more, and he has been outstanding defensively as of late. Dame and Giannis starting to find a little bit more rhythm. Giannis, I don't want to do like the cliche internet thing, like I don't think people get how good he is thing, because like that could be oversaturated to a degree. It does feel like with Giannis in particular, or maybe just compared to other superstars in the league, it does feel like he gets a little undersold with what he brings to the table offensively and what he brings as a shot creator. He's really freaking good inside the arc. Like, the jumper is questionable and has been questionable, though that's starting to perk up as of late. Just keep an eye on the jumper. But, like, what he does as a driver, I think after you see enough dunks and drawn fouls and people bear hugging him before he gets a shot up, you see enough of that and you just kind of go on autopilot when you're watching Giannis. But, like, I remember writing about it a couple of years ago. There is such a level of nuance to the Giannis drives, the pacing that he does it with, the way that he sets up the drives, the way he sets up the spins, the Euro steps, the way he alters his stride length when he gets downhill. Like, there are so many minute things that he does as a driver that I think could be appreciated a little bit more. I've been having a lot of fun watching him during this recent stretch. Watching the Dallas game over the weekend, where it almost didn't matter who was defending him. He was just going to get to his spot. And then once you sag off, like, you sag off of him and you're still in trouble because he either just chews up that space and you have to foul him, or you're getting dunked on, or he's finishing over you. Or as he establishes a rhythm, here's a nice little 13-foot jumper just to keep you off balance. Here's a 17-foot jumper. Me and you have talked quite a bit about him finding that balance. You've been higher on it than me. I just look at, hey, just please stop taking these above the break threes. Just do something else. But, like, it is important, to your point, for him to be able to strike that balance between the jumper, keep defenses off balance, and mix that in. So it's been fun watching him find that blend. And then with Damian Lillard, it would appear he is not who he was the first week and a half of the season. He's really freaking good at basketball. A quick stat for you, Steve. 83 players have logged at least 75 drives so far this year. Do you know who's first in points per possession? It is Damian Lillard.
I would guess Dame.
It is Damian Lillard. 1.35 points per possession on trips featuring a Dame drive. And this is with him not shooting well. This is with him not even, like, finishing at the level that we've seen in the last 2-3 years. He's getting to the free throw line a ton. That obviously helps. And then you just think about the level of attention that he still draws as a driver. Again, Milwaukee's offense hasn't been perfect. They're still trying to figure out their tempo in the half court. They're trying to figure out where they want to space certain guys, what actions they want to flow into. But you're still getting this level of production whenever Damian Lillard drives the basketball. I think that is a really good sign.
Well, I was going to add to your Giannis point. I think one of the things that we've seen, if you look at his last 5 games going into today, averaging 36 points, 11.2 rebounds, 5.6 assists, shooting 67.6% from the field, playing at a very high level. Now, the one thing I've noticed with the Bucks offense, a little more decisive of late, even if you don't love the movement or the tempo at times, this is what we're running, this is what we're getting to. And the thing with Giannis is, take a look at his post-ups, take a look at his drives, take a look at the moments where Dame has it, and now it's a quick swing to Giannis, and now he attacks. Or Giannis brings up, says, hey, I'm going right to a post-up, I'm going right to work. And remember, the spacing a little bit different. Not as much, hey, let's put a guard at the dunker spot. There's more room. I think one of the things people sleep on with Giannis is passing ability. That's one of the things that's popped in the half court for me. When he's in the post and teams are showing help, or they double, or they commit late, he's getting that ball out of there. And so that's been a huge plus for them. And then you talk about Dame. I like the fact that they're blending those two together without just leaning on it. And I know a lot of noise about, hey, they should probably run this more. I totally understand. But being able to mix in some of that pass and cut action with Dame and Giannis, so Dame can get downhill and Dame can lead the dance a little bit, and we're kind of getting this pick and roll without letting you know we're getting this pick and roll, I think that's important. Some of the off-ball stuff we've seen with Dame screening for Giannis has been key. But it's felt more decisive from the Bucks on both ends of the floor. And to tie it back to your defense point from earlier, Brook in the drop, obviously we know what he can do. When he times and protects the rim, it's great. You're seeing the guards also adjust to that, and that's just as important in this scheme. Damian Lillard, picking up, navigating screens, contesting. I was told that was not something that happened ever. But you're seeing that. You're seeing Malik Beasley give that kind of effort. So that gives the drop coverage its punch. Bobby Portis comes in. Hey, you can be at the level. You might trap. We could switch with you. We could do some of the activity that Coach Griffin may want to do. So you kind of see the Bucks trying to put it all together at the same time. I do find it very interesting. There's always takes like, hey, we should get a new coach. Like, he just got here. And then you counter that with the takes of, like, hey, coaches need to listen to their players. Well, you listen to Brooke. You listen to Dame. He's trying to find a way to mold what his vision for this team is and what they are looking to be or what they could be. And that's an important point that I think people miss sometimes. I got a stat for you on Dame, right?
Okay.
Bucks are 8-0 when Dame scores 20 or more points.
Seems pretty good.
So it's kind of wild because I've enjoyed watching the Bucks turn around, but it's like, oh, they're playing defense and Dame's making shots.
Huh. That seems pretty important. I have some Dame stuff and a couple of Dame stats I want to drop for you. But while we're on the, I guess just related to the blend with Dame and Giannis in particular, I'll drop this one very quickly per second spectrum. You mentioned the pass and cut. I don't know how they would like track that particular portion, but just on pure handoffs, 1.05 points per possession, which is like a fine number. On pick and rolls between the two, 0.84 points per possession on trips featuring a Dame Giannis pick and roll. That is 54th of 61 pick and roll combos with at least 100 picks. Jimmy and Bam is last this year, which is also interesting. We could dig into that some other time. What exactly have you seen from the pick and roll combination between those two? We can, you know, obviously there are conversations to have about volume, but when they actually do run it, what are you seeing? Is it just missed shots that's leading to that kind of lower number? Or do you feel like defense is doing anything? Natural adjustment period between those two? Just like, how have you felt about their pairing in that action?
Just an adjustment period. My mind immediately goes to, there was a play in the Charlotte game. Dame's bringing it up in transition. Giannis is coming to set an empty corner pick and roll for him. Everything looks fantastic, except you realize neither Brook Lopez or Malik Beasley have gotten up the court yet. So as they run this pick and roll, all of Charlotte's guys were like, oh, nah, let's go this way. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's going to command a lot of attention. So I think it's the volume, and it's just figuring out when, how, and where is the best place to use it. And I think part of that is also making sure that Dame is comfortable in general to a degree, which seems wild to say because he's Damian Lillard and he's very good at basketball. But what you don't want to do is have a scenario where you're just running that and just trying to figure that out. And because of the attention it's going to get, now it's a pass every time. Dame passes, now Giannis passes, now you're in rotation, but that's cool. How do they handle teams trying to switch? Is that really a good idea? It's more just in a weird place for me than just, hey, they're struggling and won't figure it out.
I got you. And to be clear, like I think they are two incredibly gifted offensive players. I think they're going to figure it out. And like with numbers like these, you always have to factor in. Sometimes this is why you have to watch the film and not just cite the number. Sometimes it's ran perfectly and Dame just misses a pull-up or a floater. Or it's a pocket pass to Giannis and he misses a layup and then gets an offensive rebound and scores. Like, that's not going to factor into that kind of number. So like, it's not that it's just been bad every time they've tried to run this. I think for me, what's kind of popped as I started watching those possessions specifically earlier this morning, it's kind of tracking Giannis as a screener more than anything. How much contact is he making? How early is he slipping out of some of these? And when he does slip, like, how deep is the roll, actually? And, like, some of that is going to be the timing and the spacing elsewhere, right? He can't just go full-fledged ahead if everybody else isn't set, if the defense is already packed in. But, like, it does feel like Giannis is coming a little short, and I don't know if that's just him kind of pre-programming, oh, right, I got Damian Lillard now. This is different. He's going to draw two. I'm going to have a short roll. And sometimes he's just leaving food on the table as a roller with how he cuts some of these shorts. You're not getting the advantage that you think you should get. Because that it hasn't been like, it's not a full-fledged trap. And because defenses kind of know, oh, Giannis isn't rolling all the way. And this isn't the first time people have brought up what Giannis does as a roller, like the literal role. We know how effective he is as a scorer. But it's not the first time we've talked about like the depth of the role and how much juice he has as a roller. And so I think some of that is kind of perking up when just going through those possessions. So I'm interested to see how that progresses. But again, the fact that that part isn't figured out yet, and the offense is still good, and now Dame is starting to make shots. And as you cited a little bit earlier, Giannis over his last five, averaging 36, which, good gracious, 54-12 against Indiana, 35-10-7, 4-2 against Orlando, 35-11 against Chicago. He just had 40-15-7-2-1 against Dallas. Just let's not take Giannis for granted as they're also trying to figure this stuff out. He's really freaking good at basketball. Let's just sprinkle that in there.
Well, I wanted to add to it. It's cadence, too. Pick and roll is a dance to a degree. And so Giannis has a particular way that he sets up his screens or he sets up his footwork to get a hit. Dame has a particular cadence with his hesitation dribbles as far as setting up to come off or setting up to reject. I think if they clean that up, it'll look a lot better. The one thing that I want more people to pay attention to, the Giannis post-ups where Damian Lillard is one pass away. And some of the things that they're opening up there, as far as Dame's one pass away, next pass maybe is Malik Beasley, Brook is spaced. They're leaving some meat on the bone sometimes, because I feel like it's a kick, an extra pass, and then Brooks like, oh, let me get out the way. It's like, well, you could flow into a pick and roll here. There's some things we could do. But that for me is Milwaukee's biggest offensive thing. Can we kind of fine tune what we're finding and now make it more impactful?
Got you. And then very quickly on the Dame front, the stat I want to cite. So over the last three games, we've seen a little bit of a shift from the rotation pattern. And this is something that you kind of alluded to with Adrian Griffin listening to Dame, to where earlier in Dame's career, you know, in the Portland era, he would play the entire first quarter and the entire third quarter, and you have the breaks early in the second and the fourth, and he kind of finishes out from there. So we've seen, you know, earlier in the year, Dame was playing like the first 7 or 8 minutes of the first quarter, and then you get the extended break in the second, you know, in the first, into the second, come in midway through. Over the last three games, it's been back to that, play all of the first, play all of the third. Coincidentally, Damian Lillard is averaging 30 points and 10 assists over his last three games. Now, granted, he has played Charlotte, who, after a strong first week and a half, the defense has just not been good. So I just want to, you know, hurts my heart. But the Charlotte defense hasn't been very good. Dallas's defense, after a solid start, or solid for their personnel start, defense hasn't been good, especially as of late. So, like, you can factor that in to those numbers. But then you zoom out for the year. Damian Lillard in first halves, averaging 11.2 points, shooting 25% from three, 35.6 overall from the field. Damian Lillard in second halves, where early in the year, like, it goes to, like, instead of the first 7 or 8 minutes, first 8 or 9, sometimes 10 minutes in the third quarter, then you get the break. 13.6 points, 37% from three, 43.6% overall from the field in second halves. It just feels like he has a better rhythm when he just has the big extended stretch, little break, and then comes back in versus the shortened one. And so if this continues, in addition to Dame is just a slow starter sometimes in terms of how he kicks off a season, I think as they figure out what each of these stars like, and that's one thing I think Adrian Griffin deserves a hat tip for, like, you can, like, we talked about, hey, why are they playing defense like this, etc. I think it's commendable that he is quick to adjust. This isn't working. My players don't like it. Let's have a conversation. Let's make some tweaks. I think it's a good thing that he's that adaptable versus, nah, this is going to work. Y'all just need to perform better. And it being like, that could be problematic. So I just want to give Adrian the quick hat tip there. But as Dame finds more comfort, as Dame and Giannis finds more comfort, everyone else is going to slide in. And just a quick hat tip. Again, Brook Lopez has been incredible defensively. He's been one of my favorite screeners to watch. Like, the partnership between him and Dame has been pretty fun this year. Brook just setting screens 45 feet from the basket. This is not typically something that he's done in his career. So watching them sort through that has been fun. And then again, to the defense point, he's just blocking everything and contesting a whole bunch of shots. Malik Beasley shooting the absolute leather off the ball. An injury that we didn't bring up, Jay Crowder's been out. That's opened up more playing time for Marshawn Beauchamp, Andre Jackson Jr. as well. They've had some fun flashes. Marjan just feels better on both ends of the floor. Andre Jackson, the shot remains what it is. But even with the shot, like, he's knocking down some sidesteps sometimes. Like, there's a level of aggression that I've seen with the shot that's encouraging to me. We will see how that continues to progress. You mentioned Bobby Portis and his activity defensively. Offensively remains a guy that you can just dunk the ball to. He's shooting well from three right now. That's obviously a positive. Milwaukee's starting to find some stuff. So just wanted to give them the hat tip. Did you have any closing Bucks thoughts?
I'm keeping an eye to see what it looks like as we get more Chris Middleton, more Brook Lopez. I don't feel like they've been, how do I word this, themselves offensively. I think there's some meat left on the bone there. So they're coming along at the right pace.
Got you. And before I toss this over to you, just quickly want to give a hat tip to Miami, who's what they've won 7 of their last 8. They just lost to Chicago after they went up, 22-1? In that first quarter, and they lost that game. And if you've watched Heat games throughout your life, you just kind of knew, this is a big lead early. Can't wait to see how Miami squanders this one. They had to put the Heat fan hat on over the weekend. Like, here it goes again. But regardless of that output, they've been incredibly fun. No Tyler Hero for an extended stretch again, but Duncan Robinson is filled in very admirably. He just looks really good as a starter. Like, the three-point shooting is what it is. Catch and shoots off movement. Does not care about contests, particularly when he's pulling in transition. The drives have been incredibly fun. Talked about that last week, so I'm not going to hang there too long. Bam's been incredible. Jimmy Butler's been more aggressive as of late. hey, with Highsmith's been solid, Caleb Martin back into the rotation now. So you're starting to see Miami go to a little bit more zone with him at the top. In addition to the rim pressure that he provides, we're going to see where the shot lands for him. But keep an eye on Miami. They seem to be pretty darn good after making the finals last year. So I for one, am shocked that the good team is... Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Well, no, just to say, do your Miami Heat checklist. If you are someone who does not believe in the Miami Heat, probably should stop doing that because they find a way every time. But you have Bam, more decisive, more aggressive, taking those shots. The nights where Jimmy Butler, who feels like he's starting to want to shoot more, look out for those. Kyle Lowry is doing Kyle Lowry things. They just have guys who fit into what they want to do. They know their job. They do their job. So for me, if Miami is the defense headed in the right direction, what kind of shots are they able to generate? If both of those things are where they need to be, Miami's going to be very good. You're going to have the nights where they can't do one or the other, and it's going to be bad. But they're going to compete every single night. So just that's my Miami Heat 101, just base.
There you go. There you go. And then just a very, very, very quick hat tip to OKC, who's on yet another win streak. Top two seed in the West right now. Just keep an eye on the young guys. I'll leave it there. I have more Thunder thoughts later in the pod. But they've been fun. Steve, who's caught your eye as of late?
Did you sneak in OKC? Here's the one thing I'll say about OKC. The most impressive part is they're 6-1 on the road. That's very important. That will loom large. They are also 5-4 against the Western Conference. And 5-0 against the East. Just throw it out there.
So if they make the finals, then they can... Okay, anyway, continue.
What? Don't start with me, man. I don't feel good. Sacramento Kings. I want to talk about the Sacramento Kings. And I felt coming into the season, this was a good context for the Kings. Had a really good year last year. All these teams made these moves. So guess what? You don't get to feel the weight of the expectations of what you did last year. You can kind of slide into that no one believes in us role. And they started the season the way they started the season. And, hey. The one thing that was missing, though, Nekias, was De'Aaron Fox. And let me tell you, buddy, De'Aaron Fox is playing at a high, 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 high level. 30-plus points per game, shooting 50% from the field, 35 or better from three. There's only three players that are doing that right now. De'Aaron Fox, Luka, and Kevin Durant. And he's taken a big leap. It's not just that he's shooting 50% from the field on 23 shot attempts. 41.7% from three. On 8.6 attempts a night. He is in command and in control of his game right now. The way that he's able to change speeds, to attack defenses, to keep things moving, I think it just puts a lot of pressure on guys because you're not sure now. You know, last year we saw him find the growth as far as attacking space and countering if you want to go under or you want to play drop against me. Okay, I can get to my pull up. I can counter with my step back. I could still hit the turbo button, but I know how to change speeds. This year, man, if he's going to be taking these type of threes at this type of level and knock them down this way with the ball movement and the player movement that Sacramento has, it's pretty tough. So last year, Nekias, the big thing for him was his finishing in the restricted area. Mm-hmm. Shot 76.5% in the restricted area last year. That's down to 54.8% this year. But you know what's up? The threes. According to NBA.com, 41.5% on above the break threes. He's at 33.4 last year.
Woo.
Now, when you look at the tracking data, it's his work off the dribble that makes this tougher. He's shooting 47.2% from three on pull-ups. That was at 30 last year. He's shooting 51.7% from two on pull-ups. That was 45.9% last year. And now here's the tricky part. This is not one of those scenarios where the growth in the shot has taken away from the growth with the drives. He's still fourth in the league in drives per game at 17.3, and he's still first in the league in points off drives, 15.7. Yes, base stat. I didn't go per possession times 1,000 divided by 36. I just looked and saw that he was number one, and I put it down in the notes. So what you going to do about it, user 887? I don't feel good. But... The level that he's playing at is so important for Sacramento. And I think defensively, they're never going to be a juggernaut. but they just have to keep working to get into a position where they can do their job. You felt more activity from their guards as far as being active and Sabonis staying in his drop adjacent area, or at least mixing in some coverages at times. Sabonis has been good this year. The big one is Keegan Murray. They're doing a lot of work with Keegan Murray. And the one thing I want people to look at, who are they having Keegan Murray guard? Look at some of the people that they are having him defend. Mike Brown has said, you are going to be a 3-and-D guy. You are going to take all these shots. I will take you out if you don't shoot. And hey, yeah, go guard Donovan Mitchell. Go guard the point guard. Pressure the ball. Go play defense there. Malik Monk. Malik Monk is funny. In that Dallas game, Kyrie almost hit a buzzer beater, but they called it off. And there's a slow-mo replay of Malik Monk just fist pumping at Kyrie. Because he knew it was no good. And I'm like, that guy's a madman. But he's still in his role. You got JaVale McGee as an elbow hub at times. Harrison Barnes chugging along. So I would just say don't sleep on the Kings. Because if Fox is going to be able to play at this level, if Sabonis is going to look to finish through contact, and let me tell you, he's been looking to hit almost everyone that I've seen. So keep an eye on the Kings, man. You got any Kings thoughts?
Yeah, like I think I've been in wait and see mode with Sacramento just because, again, De'Aaron Fox was out and that just disrupts so much of what they want to do. Like I was, you know, it's just different. All due respect, it's different when Davion Mitchell's in versus De'Aaron Fox is in. Like the scoring gravity is different. And even as you look at some of like, when they try to clear a side for Sabonis and Kevin Herter to work with a handoff or a pick and roll. When De'Aaron Fox is one pass away, like, yeah, you can cheat over if you want to, if you don't trust the shot. He can just shoot into that gap as a cutter, or it's a quick pass to him, and then he just attacks that gap with a drive, and now you're in trouble. When it's Davion Mitchell, you know, I'm going back to like the Rockets games from a couple of weeks ago. Oh, that nail help is just planted. You have fun. Kevin Herter, you're not going to come off clean going to your right. Someone's just going to be here, or going to your left, depending on which side they're running on. We're just going to be here. And Davion, if you knock down a shot, golf claps. If you don't, we won. And so just bringing Fox back into the fold just changed the dynamic of their offense. To your defense point, they've been pretty much an average defense, depending on what you use. NBA.com, they have about 14th to 15th in defensive rating heading into the Monday slate of games. Clean the Glass has them at 15th. Clean the Glass filters out garbage time. The half-court defense hasn't been great. Bottom third in the league in half-court defense. The transition defense has been good. Fourth lowest transition frequency allowed for the Sacramento Kings. When you talk about nailing the little things and making sure we are matched up, we're not giving up the easy stuff. They've been really good at that. And then overall, the Kings are 12th in pace this year, which is still fast. And again, a lot of that is De'Aaron Fox mixed a chunk of time. But I am going to start keeping an eye on how fast do they want to play? If you are going to commit to different defensive matchups and giving Keegan Murray more responsibility, if you're playing Domantas Sabonis a little bit differently in pick and roll, the emphasis on getting back and getting set is going to be interesting. And that may change like how fast you want to go offensively. Also, if the De'Aaron Fox is just going to score like this, then they're just going to have more half court possessions defensively anyway, because they're just going to score at an obscene rate. So that's going to be something interesting to track. But something that we talked about heading into the year, where can they get the defense? If it's going to be 15th, which again, that isn't elite, but if it's going to be 15th and now you have De'Aaron Fox playing like this, Sabonis playing like this, Kevin Herter starting to come back. Again, mentioned the different defensive role with Keegan Murray. I think that's played a part in why he hasn't shot it as well. But like, I know that dude can shoot the leather off of it. If we're looking at like fifth best offense, 15th best defense, this is a team you're really going to have to worry about.
You said we didn't mention Keegan Murray's defense, or you say his offense?
Huh?
You say we didn't mention Keegan Murray's defense or his offense?
No, I said we mentioned the defense.
Okay, I was about to say. I was like, hey, are you not listening over there, dog? What did I tell you?
No, I heard you pick up.
No, but I mean, if I told you preseason, hey, Keegan Murray's going to be guarding Kyrie and Luka, what would you have thought?
Oh, no.
Okay, we've advanced.
Also, can I ask a related question?
What you got? That
teeters on respectfully messy, but I don't mean it to be.
It's messy.
So wait, go ahead. With Keegan taking on these responsibilities, how have you felt about the Harrison Barnes year so far?
Fine. Does his job. They still need him.
Okay. Figured I'd get the
let me go ahead and check Harrison Barnes' age real quick.
Are we bringing back the season one dunker spot bit?
It's never left. Name me a vet that you enjoy.
How much time you got?
I'll wait. Hey, we can stop this right now. We got time.
Well, as the Chris Paul guy on the Gosh Darn Pod, I feel like that immediately puts me in contention.
He's shooting 38%. He ain't playing no defense. What's up?
No defense. Top 10 in defensive EPM this year, bud. Which we gonna talk to.
What?
Let's go.
Defensive we here. EPM.
We here.
What in the NBA U stat was that?
Wow. All right.
I like BPM, not EPM. What you talking about? Euro wow. Step past the 38%, huh? It's all right. Salute Chris Paul.
No, shot hasn't fallen. That assist, the assist to turnover ratio is pristine, though. So he's helping them direct the offense. But anyway, we're going to talk about the Warriors. Did you have any closing Kings thoughts? Quick shout out to Keon
I do not.
Quick free throw adjacent question. How close is Keon Ellis to Davion Mitchell?
There's still a level to it. I think Keon brings the offense. Davion brings the defense. Davion got to figure out the offensive part or else it'll get closer.
Okay. All right. Figured I'd get your thoughts. Any other teams you want to shout out?
The Celtics. I just want to point out that they are figuring some things out in some tight games. That starting lineup is very good. It's a little slow late in games, but starting to feel, oh, yeah, they can just roll through different stuff. They can try the Tatum as a screener and attack switches, and then they can give it to Jaylen Brown. And if that doesn't work, hey, Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, y'all just run pick and roll. And if that's just your third late game option, I mean, it's kind of fun.
And the fun part is that you can go through Tatum, you can go through Brown, you go Drew and Kristaps. And then, oh, yeah, here's Derek White hitting every clutch shot in existence when you divert your attention there. They are a really fun, talented, deep group. So quick salute to the Celtics, who are also on the win streak right now. As for teams that's making me think, or a team that's making me think, rather, I kind of just want to gauge the temperature on the Warriors right now. As they are on this losing streak, obviously they've been without Draymond Green for the last three games after being suspended for five, after fisticuffs, antics, shenanigans, whatever word you want to use, during the first 2 minutes of the Wolves game last week. So that was fun. Before I go granular, broadly, do you have a level of concern about this Warriors group? Or is it just kind of like wait and see, wait till they get back home, they're going to be fine?
I mean, the concern is probably just you had that start. You won four games on the road early. You come home and you lose five of a homestand. That will make me raise my eyebrows a little bit. That's not ideal. As far as the collective goes, I would probably say, okay, can you get the defense where you want it to be? And can you get closer to the vision of what you want offensively for both your lineups? Because this could just be a symptom of the defense can get better. And hey, all the people we need to play well right now are not playing well right now at the same time. You know what I mean? It'd be like if I was sick and you were sick on this pod, it would just be a bad pod. Does that mean it's a bad pod overall? I'm not sure.
No, the answer's no.
So, I mean, there's objectively things you can point to. The fact that it's Steph averaging 30 and no one else averaging more than 14. Well,
less than ideal.
Who's creating the plays? Is the movement popping? Like, there are things to point to, but I don't think it's I'm out on Golden State scenario, for me at least. Problem is, you lose two baseball series at home to Minnesota and Oklahoma City, who just go right by you. That's where it's like, well, where are you at with them? You want to talk about them, so I know you got some heat over there, bud.
No, we're talking about the Warriors. What do you mean? But I just had to sprinkle it in. Come on. I think for me, I don't have different questions structurally than I had heading into the year. Like, can they find the right blend of shooting and size and shot creation? And I think when you lose Draymond, you know, to your defense point, you're just losing by far your best and most valuable defender. And you have to reconfigure everything. And what compounds that is Jonathan Kuminga being uneven defensively. really good on-ball flashes, and then you get him off the ball, and it's, okay, is he switching this? Is he losing track of this guy? That's not going to help garner trust, which could then just lead into a bigger Steve Kerr conversation if you want to have it. But, like, that's been uneven. Andrew Wiggins, I don't know what was going on. It was nice to see him have the big night against OKC in what was just one of the most fun games of the season already. But it was nice to see Andrew Wiggins bounce back. And you're starting to see more pockets of him looking assertive and decisive offensively. Shots starting to fall a little bit more for him. Defense starting to perk up. We wanted to get back to that near all defense level that we've seen the last year and a half from him. But it's nice to see him playing well. But when he isn't playing well, Jonathan Kuminga's uneven. And Klay Thompson certainly hasn't been his all defense level self, which, you know, age, injuries, shouldn't expect that. But when all three of those like two-way wings are struggling in some way, shape, or form, it further compounds, okay, what kind of size do we have? What kind of lineups can we play exactly? What do we do here? And so I don't know if I'm like more concerned or it's just like, oh, this is what it looks like when it's bad. And just kind of having that confirmation of, okay, it can't go backwards because this is what it looks like. And if this is what it looks like in a playoff setting, it's just not going to work. So like that's something that I've been trying to sort through. And then on the Klay Thompson front, it just hasn't been a fun season for him. And even with that, I'm trying to balance how much of this is Steph missed some games. And when you're missing your best player slash gravity creator, your looks are going to look tougher. And if you're shifting Klay into more of an on-ball role, that's never been his thing. He can attack against smaller players, post them up, get to some quick pull-ups from the mid-range area and stuff like that. But like, if you want him to lead your offense, like that's never been optimal for him. And then you think about Klay in this stage of his career, that's not a fair expectation for him. And if it's that, plus Andrew Wiggins isn't playing well, and now you're also missing Draymond, who opens up some stuff for his playmaker, so much of Klay's context has been harder for him, independent of what he's doing. But then when you get into what he's doing, like some of the shot selection stuff has just not been good for Klay as of late, just to be frank about it. Even within the context that he's dealing with, there are just some shots he shouldn't be taking.
Time out.
What's up?
How do shooters work?
What do you mean?
How do scorers work? How do shooters work?
They get them up.
You got to take some of the good with the bad, right?
That's true.
For every Steph Curry make, there's going to be a few of those misses. Now, this is not justification, but when you say the shot selection, that is kind of Klay, no?
It is.
That is Duncan Robinson. That is all the elite shooters are going to take some of those looks where it's like, hey, what are you doing? But you need about three or four of those to live with the other ones. So I'm just going to point that out. Continue.
No, I think that's fair. That's a fair point. I guess to your point, that has always been part of the Klay diet. And even looking at some of the second spectrum stuff with him, we don't get too deep into it, but they have like expected shot quality and stuff like that. Klay has outperformed that metric basically every year of his career except this one, or as far back as the tracking data goes in 2013-14. He's outperformed it every year except this one. And so to your point, like tough shots or quote unquote bad shots isn't new for Klay, but I think in light of them not going down, it feels worse. In light of the context, it also feels worse. But then there are also some of the pockets like that late stretch against OKC where he takes a bad one, it's an offensive rebound. Steph drives behind the back pass. He pump fakes. Defender closes his airspace and he takes a shot anyway with time on the clock. It's like, okay, we understand you're going to get going. You can't lean into pressing. And like, that's what it's kind of felt like on some occasions for me. And that's where I'm just like, all right, this part isn't as airtight as it needs to be.
No, that's fair. I think for me, to your point, because of what they need from him shooting wise, it feels louder than usual. And I think because he's trying to get going, they're trying to get going. You have a possession where Klay comes off a screen, he throws right into the post. It flows right into a post split. He's got the shot that you want. And he doesn't make that one. Mm-hmm. And because he didn't make that one, the next one he takes doesn't feel the same. Because if he makes two, you look at the third like, all right, you're trying to feel it. Mm-hmm. But if it feels like he's searching. And now that is my only thought or concern. I would be more concerned if Klay stopped shooting. If Klay got passive, if Klay wasn't taking some of these shots, I know that sounds wild. I know there are some of the ones where it's like, hey, quick swing up the floor. Then he hits it. I think, what was that? His only make against Oklahoma City was a throw ahead bop right in front of your eye. That was it.
Yeah.
That was the one. That was the 1-3. So it's just like, it's one of those things where you need him to stay confident. You need him to keep letting it fly. How do you balance it out, though? And I think for me, when you look at Golden State's offense, I'll let you get back to the clay point. I know I'm going.
No, you're good.
I feel like the blend is thrown off a little bit, where I'm not sure they know what they want to go to for each person outside of Steph. Chris Paul has the pick and roll stuff. Teams kind of said, cool, switch or drop. Well, that took a little bit of meat off that bone. Andrew Wiggins, let's get you going with a post up. Well, we ain't really moving around that. Hey, Clay, here's some movement for you. Well, you're not really making the shots. And so which one is going to be the thing that ties everything together? And that's the tough part is like usually in this kind of stretch with Steph playing this way, hey, Steph, go do stuff. But you got Chris Paul and you changed how you done things. Like how many pick and rolls does Steph run this year? Volume wise. I know I put you on the spot with a number.
I can see if I can pull that up usually, very quickly.
Usually I continue to speak while you do this. Sorry, audience.
Per second spectrum, Steph is at 301 on-ball picks received, about 37 per 100 possessions.
Okay.
And just to quickly cross-reference that, Steph was about 36.9, so about where it was last year in terms of volume. Okay. Yeah.
It's like, I'm about to be the old last year Warrior person. They just spam more pick and roll. Like, I feel like they're just searching. They're searching right now. And they need one thing to fall right so they can get back right. Maybe it's the defense. Maybe it's Clay scoring. Maybe it's Wiggs becoming a driver again. Maybe it's Chris Paul leading the charge. I don't know, but something feels off.
Yeah, to your blend point, like I think that's a good one. And again, that's where I'm just like, I'm watching these games. I see that it's off. How much of this is, it's November 20th. Sometimes players just get off to cold starts and it's going to be fine. How much of this is, hey, Draymond would probably open up some of this with his screening, however you feel about the screening, but his screening and the playmaking. That may make things easier. Steph missed those two or three games. That's not ideal. Some of that's just going to make all these numbers look worse because of how they performed in the games without Steph. So, like, I'm trying not to overreact and more so trying to pay attention to, okay, what is the process? What are some of the, like, physical trends as it pertains to, like, Clay in particular? It's like, he's gotten off cold starts before. He's had cold stretches before. And he's heated up. Like, it wasn't the cleanest start for him last year. And then middle of the year, he's just setting the Nets on fire. So, like, I'm not in the Klay Thompson is just a cult product. He's going to shoot 33% from three the rest of the year. He's bad. I'm not in that camp, just to be transparent about it. I do look at, I mean, I just went through the context stuff for him. So, like, there are some stuff that's just out of his control. Within that, highest turnover rate of his career, lowest rate of two-point attempts of his career, 5.7 per game this year, 7 per 36 minutes if you want to go there because he's only playing like 29 minutes a game. So like all that's down. He's not generating the same level of separation. And I think that's the thing that's kind of popping beyond the percentages. Even with some of the contested looks, they feel more contested. And like second spectrum track, some of that stuff, I was looking at that. 67% of his shots are deemed heavily contested. That's the highest rate since they've been tracking it in 2013, 2014. So like you see some of that stuff. The driving numbers are down. And it's just like, okay, I know he's going to shoot better. But I guess the question that's now coming to my mind is like, okay, how much better is this going to get? If this is the level of separation he's getting when he's coming off of these screens, or when he's running these pick and rolls, or when he's trying to drive, are all of these shot attempts just going to become tougher? And so now instead of normalizing to 42% from three, does it normalize to 39%, which is still really good, but it's a little bit different than all world. And if that's the case, what does that mean? I guess are some of the thoughts I'm starting
at. You want more post-ups?
I guess depends on.
There goes your separation point. I'm just catching right here. Is that what you want? I'm asking you.
I mean, you can probably sprinkle him in against smaller guards. Like, he can still raise over the top. But again, like, those are just some of the thoughts that I have with Clay. And this is why, again, they are in the team that makes me think section. So it's just like, well, this isn't great, but like, I know they aren't this. But what are they, though?
I think the defense is where my eyes go to. Like, if they can't clean that up in this Western Conference, they're not going to hit that ceiling. I think, again, with Clay, he's got to have to keep letting it go. I know people are going to say what they're going to say. He's got to keep letting it fly because now you don't want to get in a position where you're just kind of running to the corner in transition. He's got to keep playing through it.
Okay, I got you. That's where I'm at with the Warriors. Did you have a team?
I had a question.
Okay.
Let's have some fun. Very quickly, do you have any Detroit Piston thoughts?
It's funny you say that because I literally almost typed them into the dock and I'm just like, you know what? I'm not about to do that right now. I want to let it breathe a little bit.
Okay.
But like the volume of the Cade comments starting to rise over these last few games is like, hey, man, even though I didn't expect them to be like a play-in contender and stuff, I didn't expect it to look like this. And obviously injuries don't help. They still haven't had Boyan. Like they've been trying to cycle through whatever shooting they could find. Like they just signed Kevin Knox. Kevin Knox just started in large part due to the spacing that he can provide, theoretical or not. And so like they're just in a bad place. But that Cade is becoming more vocal is where I'm not ringing the alarm, but that's where the eyebrows raise for me. Where it's like, okay, y'all need to figure out what the process is and very quickly and have a process that the players feel good about. And so even if they're still losing games to better teams, it doesn't feel like this. And you don't end up in these extended ruts like this to where it all feels bad and loud. So that's kind of where I'm at with Detroit. Because there just seems to be a whole lot of toggling in the guard room. And Cade's been playing in the phone booth for most of the year. And the noise about his play, which has just been odd. My brow is raised with Detroit. Where are you with the Pistons?
Letting it breathe, but very, it's curious. A lot of decisions that make sense in this current moment, but don't necessarily make sense long-term. So trying to let that play out. Like Kevin Knox starter probably would just be bogey. So, I mean, like I get it and hey, we're trying to establish this. So I get it, but like you kind of need to see all of your pieces together at some point and the competition has to go up. I'll put it that way. I have another question for you.
Okay.
What is wilder? The Rockets being 6-1 at home and 0-4 on the road, or the Grizzlies being 0-6 at home and 3-4 on the road?
It's definitely the Grizzlies number. Which, no disrespect to the Rockets, which they are still playing well. And even the loss against the Lakers last night. That was a pretty tightly contested contest. Which, like, even the losses feel better for Houston, which I feel is encouraging compared to where it was in years past. But anyway, it's the Grizzlies number.
Okay. Who do you believe in more, the Hawks or the Nets?
Probably the Hawks. Probably the Hawks. I think Trey's going to perk back up. I am keeping an eye on the defense, though, because they've been very aggressive. And I think those reps are important for Jalen in particular, kind of on the back end and even just navigating those screen actions. But, like, it's worth keeping an eye on. But I'd say Atlanta for now.
Who do you believe in more, the Pelicans or the Warriors? Hey, you said you wanted to think. I told you I'd make you think, man.
Yeah. It's probably the... This is nasty. I feel like I believe in Steph more, but I believe in the Pelicans more than the Warriors, if that makes sense. It doesn't make sense, but that's kind of how my mind went. I guess Pelicans in 7.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. Whose good version do you believe can show up more, the Knicks or the Pacers?
Ooh. Whose good version? Ooh.
Yep, it's the phrasing on that one that got you, didn't it?
Yeah. Because I worry about some of the off-ball physicality against Tyrese and what certain teams can do to him in that regard. But again, the offense has been insane. It's honestly, good version might be the Knicks. Because I think there's a baseline of we will win possession battle. And then if Jalen and Julius actually make shots, then that gives them a higher. I'll go Knicks.
Okay. Last one, is there a point that you look at Denver and be like, hey, what's up? or have they earned the benefit of the doubt?
They've earned the benefit of the doubt for me. There's no Jamal Murray, and they're playing a lot of young dudes with that second unit. And so, like, some of this stuff is just going to be baked in, especially in November. So for me, I give them benefit of the doubt.
They're going to get benefit of the doubt from me. I guess my only question is, obviously no Jamal Murray, but who's playmaker number two right now?
Yeah, did you see the MPJ stat too? Because the answer is not him.
Because you have KCP with 8 assists against the Pelicans. Aaron Gordon with 5 assists against the Cavs. Obviously, Jokic led them. So I'm just a little curious there.
Got you.
Okay, actually, can I be respectfully messy? Reggie or Michael Porter Jr.? Who does it?
It's got to be Reggie by default, but like also.
All right.
You trying to cook.
All right. There you go. That's all the thinking I had.
All right. Well, fair enough. Fair enough. I love how you turned the thinking section into your free throws. That's a good bit. best of the business, folks. I'll get to the player shout outs really quickly before we close this thing out. I would like to start with LeBron James, who in year 21 remains really freaking good at basketball. Averaging 26 points a game, 8 boards, 6.5 assists, nearly 2 steals, 1.7 is the exact number. That is his highest steal number since the 2012-2013 season, which is boggling my mind right now. I saw this tweet this morning from Josh Eberle, who said LeBron is averaging more points right now, 26.4, than every other player who played 21 seasons did, which is Dirk, KG, Vince, Kevin Willis, and Robert Parrish, combined. Those 5 combined to average 21.4 points per game in year 21. And LeBron is averaging 26 a game. That is insane to me. Also, the Lakers, even at this stage, the Lakers are just dying without LeBron on the court. A plus 7.2 net rating in the minutes that he's played. A minus 21.8 net rating when he's off the floor. And these are just filtered for the games that he's played in to take away the LeBron missed us and whatever, whatever. A near 28 or 29 point per 100 possessions difference with LeBron James in year 21 is insane. It speaks to how great he is, still is. Also, hey, what are some of these second units doing? What's going on with his guard play, et cetera? That's got to perk up. But I've been enjoying LeBron. He remains incredibly fun in transition. You're not getting the 15 transition attacks like we see in this peak in some of these games. But like when he does rev it up, he's still stronger than you. You're not going to, you need to bear hug him or you are bouncing off and he is getting an and one. So that's been fun. Watching him dissect guys in the post. Still just firing those skips to the weak side corner. That's been a lot of fun. The jumper is just here for him right now. I hope that remains for his sake and the Lakers' sake. But he is canning a whole bunch of jumpers right now, which was a departure from what we saw last year. Just wanted to give a quick hat tip to LeBron James. You know, not enough people talk about him. So I just wanted to make sure I gave LeBron a quick shout. Karl-Anthony Towns. Averaging 22-9-3 this year. Over his last 6 games, nearly 27 points per game, 49% from 3, 92 from the line. Insane inside the arc. He's driving to the basket more, and he's doing so more efficiently, at least during this recent stretch. Averaged about 11 drives per 100 possession last year. That's up to around 14 this year. And over the last 6 games, which the Wolves are 5-1 in, that's around 17 drives per 100 possession. And during that stretch, 1.2 points per possession on a trip featuring a Karl-Anthony Towns drive. You had questions. We both had questions, but you specifically brought it up. Hey, what does he do against switches? If they put smaller guys on him, can he find the right cadence as a driver? Is it just going to be the turbo button? It's looking pretty darn good right now for Karl-Anthony Towns. So I want to give him a quick shout out. Alex Caruso, who's averaging a career high 9.6 points per game, if that matters to you. But more than anything, well, first on the scoring part, not only is he making threes, he's knocking down literally half of them. I don't think that's going to sustain, but he's knocking down shots. But the willingness to take shots, because I think that was the quiet frustration with Alex Caruso last year. Teams weren't going to treat him like he was Steph Curry. But like there were possessions where he's wide open in the corner and he passes up, flows right into a drive or flows right into a handoff of someone. It's just like, hey, for a team that doesn't shoot a lot of threes, we kind of need you to take some of these because we know you're good in the corners at the very least. So like seeing his willingness to take threes from all over the place, really. That's been fun. Defensively, he remains an absolute menace. And he will defend literally anyone. And as I was watching the end of that Heat Bulls game, I was losing my mind at Miami's offensive process, but I was always like, also like, oh, wait. So he's guarding Duncan Robinson on this possession. He's guarding Jimmy Butler now. They tried to go Duncan Bam two-man game. He switched on to Bam. Now they got Duncan off ball, but he's still roaming around as a helper and then calling out switches in mid-play when necessary. It's like, oh, right. That's probably a part of why Miami's offense is falling apart late, because they can't really shake Alex Caruso. He's just in the play all the time. So I wanted to give him the quick salute. Also, he's shooting 44% from three in fourth quarters this year. He's knocked down some pretty big shots. I go back way earlier in the season, that Toronto game that you bet me not to watch, that I watched anyway. He just made timely shots in that one. But yeah, Alex Caruso was balling. Very easy to understand why he would be a pretty fruitful trade chip for Chicago if or when they decide to go that route. Hat tip to Herb Jones, who is incredibly fun. Feels more decisive offensively. Three-point shot, not completely there yet. 34% from three. 60% inside the arc, though. Drives look good. He's making the next play. 2.8 assists, only 1.2 turnovers. Defensively, though, nasty on the ball. Wild screen navigator, taking on incredibly difficult matchup assignments. Box score numbers are insane. 2.1 steals, 1.6 blocks. Both of those are career high. He is one of two players. He's
also the only player in the league to do it. Beat you to it, bud.
See, I was going to be nice with the filters. He's one of two players to average at least 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks. Do you know who the other one is?
Man, I'm looking at the screen right now. Yeah.
Oh, well, fair enough. Okay. Shout out Scotty Barnes.
Actually, Oh, is that why you did that? You couldn't just give you couldn't give Herb his 2-1. You had to go with the 1.5 to get Scotty Barnes in here.
Not even that. I'm just saying, like, this is how insane it is. If you do go 2 and 1.5, Herb's the only one there. Hey, he should make an all defense team, and he should make an all defense first team if he's able to get the fouls down. He is fouling at a career high rate right now. I just don't like some of the calls that Herb gets. That's a rookie year thing for me. With him defensively, I just don't like some of the stuff that they call on him. Like, he has limbs, let him use them. But he gets the fouls down, he's all defense first team for me. He has been insane. He deserves his props with what he's been able to do. And the Pelicans continue to win his minutes handily. What you got, Steve? What's up?
You are not John Cena. I can see you, buddy. All right.
That's nasty work. And then very quickly, some hat tips. Lonnie Walker, career high in scoring right now, 56% on twos. 46% from three on solid volume, 16.6 points per game. I guess I should throw that. He's scored 20 or more in three of his last five games to steal the Steve cadence really quickly. He's having a fun season in Brooklyn that may be going under the radar because Brooklyn is just in a weird place right now. And Isaiah Joe, career high 10.3 points per game, shooting 50% from three. That number may not sustain, but he is one of the best shooters in the league. I love his usage. As an on-ball screener, he has set 88 on-ball screens so far per second spectrum. OKC generating 1.15 points per possession on those trips. That is eighth of 102 players to set at least 75. Do you know who's number one?
I do not.
It is Max Strus.
Ah.
Cleveland generating nearly 1.3 points per possession on trips featuring a Max Strus on-ball screen. His usage has been incredibly fun. He's having a fun season in Cleveland. But Isaiah Joe shooting leather off the ball. The inverted pick rolls with him as a screener and the go screens for him have been incredibly fruitful. Also, he is defending his tail off. And the fact that he is doing that has allowed him to play more late in games, which it's honestly been kind of interesting to track OKC's late game lineups. Like, even in the Warriors game, it was just not much Josh Giddey until they needed him to inbound, in which he remains elite, and then Chet hits the three. But anyway, hat tip to Isaiah Joe with what he's doing. Do you have shout-outs for us, good sir?
Kevin Durant. He's very, very good at basketball. He scored 30 or more in six of nine games this month, averaging 31 for the year, seven rebounds, five assists, 1.2 blocks, 52% from the field on 20 shots, 49.2% from three. Very good. Helps. Phoenix is going to be very tough with the way they use Kevin Durant and Devin Booker together. Really hurt Utah late in that last game they played as far as using them in pick and roll, forcing a double team. Look out for the cutting on the weak side. They're tough. That's all I got. That's the only one I have, bud.
All right, fair enough. Salute to Kevin Durant and by association, Devin Booker, who remains insane. You gave your free throws earlier. I have some free throws for you.
What's up?
Some early all-defense thoughts. I was like, let me put some of these together. Here's some players that I'm thinking about. I have an extended list, but on the shorter list of people that I'm thinking about. Want to float some of these out to you, see where you were with the defensive seasons. So far this year, Drew Holiday or Alex Caruso?
Give me Drew.
Okay. OG Anunoby or Herb Jones?
Give me Herb.
Okay. Scotty Barnes or Jaden McDaniels?
Give me Jaden.
Okay. Chet Holmgren or Evan Mobley?
Give me Mobley.
Okay. Joel Embiid or Brooke Lopez?
Give me Joel.
Okay. Mitchell Robinson or Rudy Gobert?
Give me Rudy.
All right. Bam Adebayo or Jaren Jackson Jr.?
Bam.
Got you. Jalen Suggs or Derek White?
It's still Derek White for me, but it's close.
Got you. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Jason Tatum?
There's a stat that says that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is having a tremendous defensive impact. I want to revisit it sometime. I'm going to go Shai. We can talk about that at a certain point in time.
Okay. A little bit of a tease, I suppose. All right. Fair enough. Dylan Brooks or Lu Dort?
Give me Dylan.
Okay. Anthony Edwards or Asar Thompson?
Asar.
Okay. That is all I had for you. And thus, we close this baby out, unless you had some closing comments. You got anything for us?
No, I got a couple free throws, man.
Okay.
Actually, I got one free throw for you, all right?
Okay.
Start bench cut. Asia Wilson, Candace Parker, Lisa Leslie.
That's nasty business. That is nasty business. I think I quote tweeted that graphic. Like, I have an answer, but you're not going to like it. Yeah, I guess everyone else is too. So I think the graphic had Candace, Asia, and Lisa Leslie listed. I think that was the order of the graphic with the start bench cut. My take is that I think it's in order. I think you start Candace, you bench Asia. All due respect to Lisa.
Yeah, you can go ahead and take us out of here, buddy.
All right.
Go ahead and take us out of here, buddy.
Respect to the OGs. Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Again, we are audio only on Thursdays, in addition to the video pod that we drop every Tuesday. So check us out. If you like what you saw from us on JJ's channel and you're not subscribed to JJ's channel for whatever reason, subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel. I think you should do that. A lot of good content, obviously outside of us, but I think we're including that as well. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you have League Pass, you have the ability to watch basketball games live with us, chat it up with us, real-time analysis. We're breaking down plays during timeouts. If we have like some late game stuff, we'll break down the plays afterwards. Really informative stuff, but in general, it is also just an inclusive community, which we just have fun, have some fun conversations. We talk about life. We can rant, vent, all that good stuff. It is a safe space for you. The link to the room is in the podcast description or the YouTube description, whichever medium you are consuming this podcast with. It should be hyperlinked. If so, just click on that link, enter your information / your League Pass info. It is free, no shenanigans. And if it's not hyperlinked for whatever reason, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, for the audio listeners, we will catch y'all on Thursday.
Good job, Mikhail. Quick question, though. Who won that Warriors-Wizards trade?